Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday at 11 o'clock, and we are continuing the discussion from last week. Last week we spoke a lot about the reality in South Africa of unemployment. You know, we were right after Workers' Day and really looking into the future, into what is holding. And there was one part of the conversation that we didn't have last week that we are going to be discussing today. And that is, if we put it in simple terms, although you've heard this question a million times, probably every Shabbos meal, but besides for that, further everywhere, is AI taking away our jobs? I mean, as much as I know nothing about AI, I could say that so many hours of work that normally took me and resources and people, even me as someone who knows nothing about AI, actually saves endless time and gets to use it as a great tool. And for that, we will be speaking to the experts. So I'm going to dive right into the conversation and say good afternoon to Dan Stillerman. Dan, you for many years had an academy that was teaching Excel and working from an actuary point of view, if I'm not mistaken, and teaching Excel. And now it almost seems like AI is the new teachers for Excel, or I don't know where that goes. But let's get to know you first, Dan. Good morning. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Rabbi G and all the listeners. Always great to be in studio. So thanks for having me.
Okay, so first introduce yourself, just about you for our listeners, what you do, etc.
So, actuary turned entrepreneur. We've been teaching people how to work smarter and think smarter with Excel as a business tool for the last 12 and a half years, almost bar mitzvah. And in the last 11 or 12 months, we haven't pivoted away from Excel. We're still very much teaching people Excel because it's such a critical business skill. But with AI taking the world by storm over the last 3 or 4 years, we found a big opportunity to assist and empower people to start leveraging, harnessing, and augmenting their lives and their work with AI. So that's what we've been doing as well since July last year.
Okay. So before we go into what you teach of AI and the opportunities with AI, what is your general vision of AI and how the world is going to look in 10 years from now?
Sure. Big question. I think if anybody sounds confident answering a question like that to me, that's a bit of a red flag, because it's shifting. It's a brand new frontier for the world. It's changing so quickly and so rapidly, and I think we're all figuring it out as we go. So I don't think anybody could be supremely confident about where we're going to be in 10 years or even 1 year. But I think that what I've seen personally is that jobs are shifting. I know that the brief that I received about this conversation is around unemployment and, you know, AI taking my jobs, and we can deep dive and take the conversation in many different directions here. But I think that AI is reshaping jobs, and I think jobs are bundles of tasks, and AI, as you mentioned, and as people are starting to realize, AI can assist enormously with different elements of one's job.
And so you're not saying AI is taking away our jobs. You're saying it's shifting our jobs.
It's shifting our jobs. And the people who are starting to lean in and show curiosity and playfulness when it comes to AI, literally feeling like you're getting into the sandpit and getting your hands dirty and playing, are starting to see enormous gains in their productivity and their output. And it's not just efficiency. Like initially I thought, just like Excel can help you, if you know the shortcuts and the tricks, you work faster. With AI, you can work faster, but it also allows you to produce work of a supremely higher quality and work that you ordinarily would never have been able to produce. And a simple example is amazing images. I mean, I'm not an artist, but now with some collaboration with ChatGPT, I can create incredibly beautiful, rich images. And that's just one simple visual example.
But you still have to know what you're asking for and what you're looking for. So it's more of a tool, less of a just make me a picture and it does it.
Yeah, I thought it was a tool. And my mindset was always, this thing is a tool and I need to learn it, just like Excel or a calculator or riding a bicycle or using a hammer. But what I've realized is that, and this was a pivotal moment for me, I watched a YouTube video in June last year by a Stanford professor, and he said that you're using AI completely wrong if you're using it like a tool. And the big shift comes when your mindset shifts from tool to teammate, and you actually approach it as if it's a person or a colleague. Your super enthusiastic intern who's a bit clumsy and makes some mistakes and sometimes hallucinates a bit, but is coachable and open to feedback and wants to help you. And when you approach it with that kind of relationship, it changes absolutely everything. You start to harness the real power and create a partnership with it.
Okay. So when you talk about a teammate, okay, what does that mean? Guide me through what are you hiring the AI to be on your team, and where do you go with that?
So it's open to, the only limit is your imagination. I mean, you can start off with it as your intern, your writing assistant, for example, to help you to craft emails or a LinkedIn post or a blog or an article. A lot of people have done that. But I think what people are seeing more and more is that AI often sounds like AI. So I think we've all read those pieces where you can see straight away that this piece is written by AI. So I think the challenge is to give the AI feedback so that it starts to sound like yourself, so it can write with you and write for you, and it becomes a dance and an iterative process where you're going back and forth with it, but where it's helping you to write. Then it can help you to research. They can help you to render amazing images. It can help you to plan and to strategize for your business. It can help you to really, the opportunities are endless. And often it's that initial spark, getting people over that first gap and realizing
that. So then, Dan, yeah, why are you saying that it's going to shift the jobs when you're actually describing a teammate that is taking over jobs?
So from my personal experience, it hasn't at all taken my job or my career or my business.
Not your job.
At all. I think, obviously, I'm speaking for myself as an entrepreneur, so I think it differs depending on the actual organization that you're working in and the nature of the team and the nature of the work. But I think that it's shifting things, definitely shifting things. So I wouldn't say that it's taking – and I think what it comes down to, Rabbi G, is – and we can delve more into this – what I've seen is that the critical thing for each person and each organization to ask themselves and to pinpoint is – what makes their job and what makes their role and their organization uniquely human? Where's the human connection? Where's the humanity in it? And to double down on that, and all the mundane stuff that can be automated and outsourced or collaborated with a machine, with AI, should be. So for example, if you go see a doctor, I want to see that human doctor because that gives me a feeling of human connection and trust. But the fact that my doctor recorded the call with an AI app and then sent me a summary and edited it and sent it to me after the consult is fantastic because it was efficient and he was augmenting his job with the help of AI to make him work smarter, faster, and more professionally, ultimately.
You know, the doctor's discussion is a very interesting discussion on its own, specifically because some areas you see medicine so advanced and amazing and the AI has done a lot. In some areas you look at and you see that the same MRI machines and the same X-ray machines that have been around for decades are not shifting. And it's almost fascinating to see, which is its own discussion. But, you know, you say it's shifting. Now, it sounds very clearly that, yes, it's not risking your job, but your colleagues, it is, because if you're taking another associate on your team that is AI and not human, that means potentially not having your whole team there as humans. So we could only really call it shifting jobs and shifting the market if it creates more opportunities for other people to get jobs that those jobs were not available before, because it definitely is taking jobs. So where would you say the benefit of AI comes into creating new jobs and new opportunities?
I think one example can be people who upskill themselves in terms of AI fluency are already becoming very in demand in the job market, because it's essentially a new paradigm, a new framework, and a new skill set, a new fluency to be able to speak to and collaborate with AI and leverage AI to get more done and to grow a business. So, for example, as you say, AI is, in inverted commas, taking jobs. For example, in the US, there have been tens of thousands of job losses, specifically in coders, in coding and programming in big tech companies. And that is unfortunate, of course. I mean, nobody wants to see people losing their jobs. But unfortunately, that's the reality of what's going on at the moment. So I think where the conversation needs to shift, I think, for each person and each organization is how can they take agency and take responsibility and upskill themselves in this new world that is here. You know, for a while maybe people were thinking it was all hype. I think
we'll ignore it until
the
it goes
eagle
away.
Has landed. It's here, and I think it's a huge opportunity in my view to actually upskill and embrace it going into the future.
Okay, so we'll have to see how that goes in a practical side of things, and we'll just take a short break, and when we come back, we'll dive more into this.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we are here in a very important conversation about AI and where that's taking us and the influence on our society in the future, etc. And I'm here with Dan Stillerman, who is the head of, what's the academy's name?
Excel Academy.
Are you going to change the name now that we're looking into AI?
Good question. So the nice thing about our business is we set it up with that play on words on Excel to help people to excel.
Right.
And we're building an AI course. We're going to call it AI Academy under the banner of Excel Academy.
Excel Academy. Okay, that's pretty cool. And, you know, about 3 years ago, maybe even a bit more, I was speaking with someone who was very, very understanding and high up there in AI. And that was when there was about a handful of them around, when it was still very unknown 3-4 years ago. And he told me that there's going to come a time, and I forgot the amount of years he told me, it wasn't a lot at all, that we're going to see a $1 billion company run by one person only, with no staff and no team and nobody.
I think they're even saying zero people, so just AI.
Just that. Okay. Well, somebody's going to have to make that money. I don't know how AI is going to spend it or own it. But yeah. But one person will do the whole thing. Right. And I want to start from a different angle. Looking at AI and where it's taking and the areas that I'm seeing it more and more affecting us is in the traditional, we'd call it, white collar jobs. And blue collar, I'm not sure how much they're affected by AI at this point and how much it will be. And I always ask myself, you know, in our school system, we definitely support our children to become doctors and lawyers and accountants and actuaries and et cetera. Not many plumbers, electricians, et cetera. Do they have a better chance in employment going forward if we actually taught them blue collar professions?
I would say it depends. It's a big question that I think in this book that I've just finished reading by Ethan Mollick, he's a Wharton professor, and he talks about, it's called Co-Intelligence, Living and Working with AI. They actually did a study of all the different a whole lot of different jobs, and the vast majority of them, they found there's a significant overlap with what AI can do and what the human can do. And there were certain blue collar jobs, as you mentioned, like a plumber or electrician or a roofer, where there's very, very little overlap. So there might be an argument to teach kids or to, you know, teach people artisanal skills and how to work with their hands if they're that way inclined. But in terms of, I don't think that it's necessarily removing white collar jobs and knowledge workers. I think, as I said, I think it's just shifting the way knowledge workers and white collar jobs are going to be structured going forward. And I know that might sound a bit abstract, but I think it will play out with time. I've seen personally the shift when, I mean, yes, I'm a business owner and entrepreneur, so maybe I'm not your typical white collar worker, but I am in the space and in the industry of knowledge work. And I've seen a lot of in my work and in my daily workflows how it's just completely revolutionized the way that I think and the way that I get my work done.
In your company, who's going to lose their job first, the graphic designer or the cleaner?
Okay, so I'd have to speak hypothetically. No, I'd have to speak hypothetically because it's actually only two humans in my business, and it has been like that for the last about 8 or 9 years. So nobody's losing their jobs, and for a number of years we haven't hired anybody or fired anybody. But what we have done
and
now,
your business grew.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did your business grow for a number of years without hiring anybody?
So our training is done online, so we can reach more people without. Without hiring more staff. So, for example, our Excel courses.
So without AI, you wouldn't have hired more.
Yeah, yeah, because people are accessing our online courses. So, we double down, and we have for several years on the human element. For example, we know that if we just send people a login to an online course, probably they're not going to do it. It's just going to get lost in their inbox. There's no human connection. There's no accountability. There's no competitiveness. So we do a 15-minute in-person human-to-human onboarding. So again, I mentioned a few minutes ago, human connection. And for us, we're doubling down on everything around human connection in our business that's crucial, and everything that doesn't really need the real-time human connection and can be either done by or done with AI, we're leveraging it because it's just the most incredibly powerful software. And as I say, it behaves like a human, so it behaves like a colleague or a staff member, and it is trainable and coachable. So context is key. If you just ask ChatGPT a question just like you would ask Google, it's going to give you a generic answer. But when you build context and the AI starts to know you and understand you and your goals and your business and your clients and your projects that you're working on and your tone and your style, then you can give it real-time context in the moment. For example, I could prompt my AI now and say I'm in the middle of a conversation with Rabbi G. It already knows that, because I've already prompted, I've got a chat about this conversation, and I can ask something relevant to this, and it can help me to structure my thoughts and structure my answer. And we can do that because it's a really nice practical way to actually see it in practice.
So you're saying it's personalized to the point that if I talk to your ChatGPT and ask for guidance, I'm going to create potential chaos.
Yeah.
Because it's going to give things that suit you and...
Yeah. Yeah.
While talking to me.
Exactly. If I wanted you to talk to my AI, I would brief it. And by the way, I've been working with Claude for the last month or so. Personally, I'm finding a lot more, just much higher quality than ChatGPT. But not that you have to throw out ChatGPT, but it's just interesting that, you know, there's so much that's being invested in these companies, and they're evolving and improving so rapidly. And one of the principles that Ethan Mollick talks about in his book is the AI that you're using today is the worst that it'll ever be, because it's only going to improve, and it's improving exponentially now. So yeah, just to answer your question, if you had to ask a question into my AI, it might get a bit confused because it would probably think that it's me.
So what does it mean it's going to improve?
Meaning the models
improve to a point that it's going to take more people's jobs, improve to a point that it's going to create a more digitalized world. And what does that mean in our day-to-day life and our society?
I think improving in a few ways. Firstly, in terms of the speed and computing power of the models, and you know the amount of information that they can ingest and process. For example, you can now upload hundreds of pages of a PDF into Claude, and it can read it, analyze it, ingest it in the space of maybe even split seconds. So the power of the models is improving enormously, and the hallucinations have reduced enormously. So what does that mean? When AI makes things up and sounds confident but is actually creating fake information.
Right.
So that's reducing enormously as the models are getting better and better. And with most of the AI companies, there's a lot of pressure on them, and we all want to hope and trust that they're going to be responsible as well going forward, because there's risks. Of course, there need to be guardrails in terms of malicious intent, you know, people prompting and going down really undesirable paths. For example, plotting, you know, God forbid, a terrorist attack. So these things, that's why I say the models and the technology is improving rapidly. Going forward, and they're coming out with better and more powerful models.
Okay, so let's go to a different angle for a second. I remember about, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, I was sitting by my grandfather's house, and I was trying to send an email. And I was getting frustrated because it took like a good 5 seconds for the email to go through. And I was like, told him, Zadie, your internet is so slow. And he looked at me and he said, define slow to me. He says, because when I was your age, yeah. I sent a letter, and if it didn't get a response in 6 weeks, then I would check what happened with it, etc. What do you mean my email is slow? The reason I'm bringing it up is because we're living in a society that one of our biggest struggles is impulsivity, is respect, is manners, etc. And a lot of psychological studies that we're seeing are showing that the way to avoid impulsivity, to avoid that need for things immediately and have a meltdown if it doesn't work, is by teaching little children manners and to wait and to ask and to communicate and to understand and not to do everything so fast. Mm. The speed of things are definitely influencing us badly, right? Kids that were growing up 20, 30, 40 years ago would watch a movie and they would sit for 4 minutes in the credits. Now a short of 90 seconds, kids after 3 seconds decide if they're going to watch it, if they have patience or not. Mm. That's on the one side. On the other side is really the jobs, et cetera, that we have. And my question to you is, the parents that are, you know, engaging in our conversation now and listening or being part of this, what do the parents of the 5-year-olds, the 4-year-olds, the 3-year-olds, 10-year-olds need to do today to try and provide a safer, healthier, and better life to their children that will be living in the AI era?
Yeah, excellent question. I must make a disclaimer up front. I'm not a parent yet. Please God, getting married in August, and please God, I'll be a parent in good time. And I'll be directly faced with those challenges, and I'll need to embrace them and tackle them head on.
Well, just ask AI what to do.
Yeah, exactly. It will help. It helps with everything. Again, I refer to this book quite a lot because I've read it recently, and it actually, it's the principle is invite AI to the table, to every conversation. And it's abnormal at first. It's weird at first. You know, I remember about a year ago, I was emceeing at an HR event, and one lady put her hand up and said, that a friend of hers, a colleague of hers, told her that she's using AI as a therapist. And the whole room burst out laughing awkwardly because it was like, how can you be using AI as a therapist? Whereas now what I've seen personally and with many, many people out there, it's one of the largest use cases of AI is AI assisting you to process your emotions.
Which a lot of dangers are coming out of that, but we'll see if that will be our discussion today.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely not a simple thing.
Just maybe back to your question in terms of parenting, I think it involves it, and it's going to require active, involved, and engaged parenting where things are discussed openly and things are controlled. And for example, I'll speak from experience that Shabbos is the biggest blessing for me, and I think for the Jewish people, and on a number of levels, but just honing in to the fact that we're off our technology for 25 hours is a blessing, because we're forced, whether we like it or not, to be off our phones, which is so critical. So I think if we can, and what I try to do is on a daily basis to infuse that philosophy into my day to day, that I do my best to go off my phone for periods of time at a time, and even if it's going for a run without my phone and just being out in nature, or over a meal, putting phones away, and I actually put my phone to sleep. I put it in a cupboard in its own little bed. I tried to do it at by 9 or 9:30 because it's so critical. As you say, speed is fantastic, but we can't be always on. We're not designed that way. It's not healthy for adults or kids.
Okay, so starting to teach your kids how to handle time alone, time away from your device, slowing down, not being in the speed consistently. What else do we need to help them understand or guide them towards a more productive adulthood?
I think when it comes to AI, what I've seen is, you know, there's huge concerns about, for example, the topic of this conversation is AI taking people's jobs, and there's also concerns about AI making people dumber in quotation marks, AI removing or reducing people's creativity and critical thinking, and the studies and the research that I'm familiar is that shows that it actually largely completely depends on the person's psychology and the person's framing of their relationship with AI. Either it's a tool that's going to do my work for me and I'm going to get lazier and not use my critical thinking and not exercise my brain, in which case the brain muscle will start to atrophy, or partnering and collaborating with AI in a constructive way where you're using it as a thought partner and you actually create a collaboration where you become more creative, more strategic, and you improve your critical thinking. And that's the foundation of that is one's mindset and approach towards the AI.
That doesn't sound like a practical thing for the mass. Obviously, specific people, yes, will do very well that way and debate with their device and with their AI, etc. Yet we do know that as we go in throughout history and society, every development of comfort that we had took away from our skill and took away from our ability to do something and to understand something.
I'll challenge you on that.
Okay, I'll challenge you. Take a car manual from a new car that was sold 100 years ago and a new car that's sold today. In the manual that used to tell you how to change oil and how to fix the brakes and how to make the engine perform better, to a manual today that says, I don't know, make sure to wear the seatbelt and don't drink and drive, and doesn't really, and most of us wouldn't even know how to start to understand the mechanics of the car and understand what it is. In a world that we have the comfort of cars, we need to go to gym, physical fitness. 100 years ago, they didn't, you know, people lived a whole lifetime without knowing how many steps they've done, right?
Yeah, but look at the longevity gains in recent times, though, with the advent of technology. We're living longer and healthier than ever.
We're living longer for sure because of the advance of medicine. It doesn't mean that our skill is better, and it doesn't mean, yes, we're comfortable and we know how to manage the technology for us, but every aspect of something that we're not practicing has been taken away. Even human communication, now that if we look at the generation that grew up already with social media, their social and human interaction is very different, and the skill of creating new friends. I'm still from a generation that every time you flew on a plane, you made three new friends.
Okay, same here.
That doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you fly, that's it. You get on the plane and you get off the plane with the same amount of friends you had. So, yes, skill is going, and it's okay because maybe we don't need the skill if we have the comfort in a different way. I'm not saying we need the skill all the time, and I'm not saying we do. It's its own debate. But I don't think there's a way to avoid that for the mass from, you know, actually not losing that skill.
Well, Rabbi G, let me ask you this. He mentions, he discusses it in the book, and it's fascinating because he says with the advent of the calculator, I think it was the 1970s or 80s, before that, kids in school were doing everything by hand, long multiplication, long division, completely by hand. And there was controversy and debate. It was a hotly debated topic of whether or not kids in school should be able to use a calculator or not. And there was a lot of resistance to it. But ultimately, what's happened over time, it's been embraced, and there's been efforts, and I guess it's debatable whether it's been effective or not, to allow kids to use the calculator, but to challenge them intellectually as well and stimulate them so that they don't outsource all their thinking to the calculator. And a similar example is in the working...
But we did lose the skill. We just don't need it anymore. Because we go to the calculator, but we
because things have
skill.
Shifted. So, Correct. Do we need to know exactly how to change the oil in our car? It's debatable. You might argue that 100%. It's a crucial life skill, and you might argue that we've got
and
the
that's
resources.
What I'm saying. We don't necessarily need it, unless we, you know, the debate always of what happens when we get into conflict with people that have that skill and we don't. Yeah. But that's a whole different area. I'm just saying we're going to lose some skills, but then some skills we do need, like social interaction.
100% human connection. That's why I say we've got to double down on that. And another example is an accountant who used to do everything by hand on a pencil, hand-drawn spreadsheet. What happened when Lotus 1-2-3 and Excel came onto the scene? That didn't remove the need for an accountant. An accountant's job, an accountant's profession and role is still absolutely critical, but their job shifted. And I think... That's what we need to focus on, how jobs and roles and tasks are shifting with AI. I'd love to do one or two live demos because I think what you're maybe concerned about is that AI is not available to the masses or not accessible to the masses. And I think through this conversation and all of our training and all of our work, we're showing that it's accessible. It's more accessible than ever. You don't need to be a coder. You don't need to be technical at all. You just need to be human and be able to speak.
When we talk about accessible, well, obviously we're in South Africa, so you have to be accessible enough to be able to own a device and to get some, which is not accessible to everybody. And, you know, internet is not everywhere yet and with that own thing and et cetera. But, yes, we can go into those demos. There are a few more questions about workforce that I think are very important, but we'll see how much time we have and where we're going to go with this. Just an announcement, and we will go to a bit of advertising and come back. We want to hear from you. Chai FM is updating our voices of Chai, and we need your voice to do it. Send us a voice note, 30 seconds or less, and tell us why you're part of Chai FM community. What keeps you listening? What does this station mean to you? Send your voice note to 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. We can't wait to hear from you.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back, and I'm here with Dan. Dan, you own the Excel Academy, right? And we are discussing AI and the relevance. And I want to ask you from the aspect of workforce, okay? One of the things that's happened quite a few years ago is the whole concept of people going into retirement, right? And by the way, you said you're going to have AI answer my question as well. So let's see how that works out. Okay, but I'm going to ask you first, right? So part of the reason that we have the retirement concept is because people were owning companies and then they had an accountant, and one day, God forbid, he dropped dead when he reached 60 or 70, and the company was not equipped to do, they had no information how to go, move from here, and they businesses were collapsing and people were not managing, and that is for they put in a concept called retirement, meaning when a person reaches an age that it's higher risk, then he'll be replaced at work, and then it saved the industry, and it was much safer. Always been a debate about pension being pushed up, and people that are much healthier today, as you said, there's a longer life expectancy, and people could work and could stay around for longer. How is AI changing that game, considering that if all aspects of the business are working with AI, it should seem much more simple for someone to take over the job without a proper handover from the person before? And AI could step into that role of, imagine I leave my position here and anywhere, and then someone else comes in and AI just briefs them on what I did and how I did and where that comes to play. Are we going to see people looking differently at pension, working longer, having a larger career term, and what does that mean for employment and for youngsters coming into the market?
Rabbi G, that's also, I think, a big question. There's quite a lot to unpack. I'll maybe touch on a few aspects. I think that, experience and wisdom of older employees who have potentially been with an organization for many, many years is hugely valuable. And I wouldn't dismiss that by saying AI can just replace that person's knowledge and expertise and experience and relationships. There's so much, again, to touch on the point of, there's so much that goes into a job or a career, particularly if a person's 65 and they've been working in a job for 40 years. There's so much intellectual property, so much capital there, human capital. But I think just to make it real and to bring it back to practicalities, for example, how does one take 40 years of experience and knowledge and expertise and wisdom and package that for the next person to take over so that person can retire if it's the right time for that person to retire? And that's where AI can be enormously helpful, because with some with a conversation and a collaboration with AI, one can fully document exactly what that person's role involves, all the all the specifics of their job, and it can just document everything that person knows and has experienced in their job to make it to ensure that there's a smooth handover to the next person and the next generation. So you know, you might call it a SOP, a standard operating procedure. AI can help you enormously to document all of that and get it to the next staff member. But I think, you know, your question is quite general, and I really think it depends enormously. I mean, retirement and retirement age is obviously a hotly debated topic as well, as people are living longer, and, you know, to force a person into retirement at 65 is not always the most appropriate thing for that person or for the organization. So, you know, there's an argument to say that person should stay because of the experience and mentor the younger staff members, this, you know, that human connection.
And the risk is lower.
And the risk is lower, exactly. But I think the question, and something that we teach in all our training, is to actually ask AI to, you know, to flip the conversation around, because I think people see AI as something that you ask a question like Google and you get an answer. Whereas what you can do is you can actually turn AI into your consultant who's interviewing you, and you can ask for help from your AI in terms of how you can leverage AI in your job or in your business, which, I mean, we can demo. You mentioned that I want to do some live demos. I would love to, because we've done that last time. And I think for me, we do a lot of workshops, a lot of showcases and presentations. We get a lot of questions from the audience. And for me, my strategy in fielding all these questions is for me to put on my thinking cap and to think critically and to exercise my brain and to think about it, but then also to invite AI into the conversation to get, maybe I've got blind spots, I don't know everything, I'm learning every day.
So how would we invite AI into this conversation?
Okay, so I've got a chat here, Rabbi G, and it's actually called Chai FM with Rabbi G, because it's a conversation that I was having in preparation for this interview. Okay. So it's got a lot of the context already. Firstly, it knows me, it knows my business, and it knows the context of this conversation. I put the brief into AI so it can see and understand more about the conversation. And I can now, I like to speak because it's approximately 4 times faster than typing, and it's more natural, and it's also nice for radio because I'll speak into the microphone and into my phone at the same time. Okay. So I'll just speak naturally. I don't have to do anything technical. I don't have to.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, I'm speaking to Claude. I'm live on air here on Chai FM. It's Monday morning. I'm in the middle of a conversation with Rabbi G. We've got a lot of listeners, and we've had a very thought-provoking conversation. Rabbi G was actually asking me about AI taking people's jobs, and this particular question is around retirement and what does that mean, and how is AI going to impact the retirement age and the retirement of individuals at 60, 65, 70 years old. And what I mentioned is that AI can help enormously with documenting the knowledge, expertise, experience, and wisdom of those senior staff members, for example, in an SOP, which can then be handed over for continuity amongst the business and new hires. What are your thoughts on that? And do you have any questions for me so that you can get more clarity on this topic? Okay, so it's just transcribed everything that I've just said, and I'm going to pop it into the AI. I'm using Claude, as I said. Okay, and Claude replies with quite a long reply. It's still busy typing, but basically it says, it's a genuinely important insight and an underrated one. The traditional retirement anxiety is about obsolescence. The machine replaces the person, and what you're describing flips that entirely. AI becomes the tool that finally captures what was always impossible to capture, the judgment, the instincts, the hard-won pattern recognition that a 65-year-old has spent 4 decades accumulating. That knowledge used to walk out the door on the last day, and now it doesn't have to. And it's actually given me a few thoughts here to add to the conversation as well. Depends how much time we have.
Amazing. So we don't have that much time, but it's amazing. So it is potentially going to be able to keep people in their jobs for longer, considering that the risk of losing that information is gone, and considering that, you know, the business stability can stay and people are still very energetic. You know, my father-in-law is way past retirement age, and he's probably much more energetic than I am. So, and parents. So definitely see that as something.
One of the points that I wanted to mention and just emphasize is the fact that it's such a human app. There's no coding involved. It's not technical at all. All you need to do is learn how to talk to your AI.
Yeah, And learn how to talk to people. And I think learning how to talk in general is extremely important. Yeah. Let's take a short break and then we're going to start wrapping up towards the end of today's show.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back and we're towards the end of a very important and special discussion here. I'm here with Dan, who owns the Excel College, right?
Excel Academy.
That is Dan Stillerman, and we are really ending off. And I just want to ask you the same question I ask most of the people I've interviewed in the last decade. And the question is, what do you wish and hope on a personal level that we know or do different for a better future?
Sure.
Caught you off guard.
Yeah. I think my biggest focus and excitement at the moment is partnering with AI and getting people for the penny to drop that they can leverage this incredible technology for the better and okay. make their own life, their family, their community, their business, everything about the way that they live their life better, significantly better, by maintaining their humanity and augmenting it and enhancing it with the help of AI. So
so learn how to use it good, enjoy it, and let it enhance your life.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. Amazing. And please God, we will get there. It's people say, why is it so important to debate it? I think it's important because we're questioning if it's going to be here or not. It's here. Mm-hmm. But it's how do we prepare ourselves? And I'll just say in that regard, as we say constantly on this show, as educators, as parents, as community leaders, we have a responsibility to prepare the next generation to be ready for it. And we cannot do that if we don't understand what we're facing, and we cannot do that if we're not focused on what needs to happen and what are the skills that we may lose by using this tool. And how do we compensate for it and allow that to happen? So, yeah, I think it's extremely important. If anybody wants to be in touch with you or connect to you, how do they do that?
Thanks, Rabbi G. So the best way would be LinkedIn. So a person can just search Dan Stillerman on LinkedIn. I'd love to connect and take the conversation forward. And we do a monthly free one-hour session live on Zoom. The next one's on the 28th of May. Used to be focused entirely on Excel. Now, for the last few months, it's actually focused entirely on AI, and we go very practical. I share my screen. I show you how it works. I show you how to prompt. I show you how I'm applying it in my day-to-day life. And then it becomes real, because otherwise I think too many people are speaking in abstract theory and concepts around AI. We're bringing it down to earth and making it real.
As we say in our language, you bring it down to tachlis.
Tachlis, exactly.
Okay, tachlis. Okay, so learning about the AI tachlis. So I guess message you on LinkedIn and learn more about it at the Excel Academy. Yeah. Dan, thank you so much for being with us today. It was really important information. Really, really appreciate it. And we got the privilege of just me and you chatting and connecting.
It was such fun. So, and the hour went, I don't know where it went. But
yeah, time flies when you're having fun. Yeah. And this show is definitely fun, at least for me. But it's great fun. So thank you. Thank you for being with us today. Thank you to Senna for putting this interview in place. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly. And thank you to our listeners that you're here week after week, 11 o'clock Monday morning, with every time with a new topic, a new discussion. We learn how to influence ourselves, our communities, to a better world and a better life. Stay tuned. Enjoy the rest of the shows. You're going to have many great shows until we're back next week on Monday at 11 o'clock. And I'm sure you'll enjoy them. I'm Rabbi G, and I'll meet you again next week at 11 o'clock.